From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The women's movement rejected the idea that mothers had to stay at home. For 30 years, women with young children moved in ever greater portion into the workplace. Recently, for the first time, that trend has reversed. Women have come home. Now, many are looking to go back to work. But going back isn't easy. Tonight on Point, reviving a career after years spent at home with the kids. But first, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld made a surprise visit to U.S. troops in Iraq today. He first flew by helicopter to Abu Ghraib prison, the scene of abuse that he said was a body blow to all of us. Then he turned to address U.S. troops in Baghdad. Scott Wilson is a Baghdad correspondent for The Washington Post. I asked him why Secretary Rumsfeld made his surprise whirlwind visit to Iraq.
The Secretary of Defense made his fifth visit to Iraq today, and it was right in the middle of the scandal surrounding the abuse of Iraqi prisoners by U.S. soldiers. He arrived, he met with the top U.S. generals here, including General Jeffrey Miller, who runs the Abu Ghraib prison where these abuses took place. And Secretary Rumsfeld then went to the prison by helicopter and took a tour of it. So it was a largely symbolic visit, probably aimed at both bolstering the troops, who are a little demoralized by this scandal, as well as his own standing in Washington, where he's come under a lot of attack for not taking this problem seriously enough, early enough.
Scott, can you describe Donald Rumsfeld's visit to the Abu Ghraib prison? We understand he drove around the prison yard in an Israeli-made armored bus. What exactly went on there? Paint the picture for us.
Yes, he did take a tour of the prison. This isn't a prison as Americans understand prisons. Most of it is outside. The vast majority of prisoners are living in tents. That is why the secretary would be in sort of a protected vehicle. There's also been a lot of disturbances at this prison over the last year. Some of this is being debated now as part of a review of the prison system.
At Abu Ghraib, we're reading accounts of hundreds of Iraqi detainees running toward the concertina wire as Rumsfeld went by. Do you know if he had any interaction with Iraqi prisoners?
I don't believe so, and this has been something Iraqi prisoners have been doing. When a group of journalists were taken out about 10 days ago to take a look at the prison grounds, prisoners did the same thing and even gave speeches over loudspeakers in English. So they've also become very aware of the scandal that's going on around them and outside them, and any opportunity to appeal to the public they're very much taking. This is at a time when General Miller is saying that he is largely opening the doors of the prison to try to get the prison population from 8,000 down to 2,000 within a month. So this is a roiling scandal, and the prisoners themselves seem to be well aware of it.
Later on, when Secretary Rumsfeld met with U.S. troops in a kind of a town meeting or pep rally at Saddam Hussein's old Al-Fah Palace, he said that he had been stunned by the abuse at Abu Ghraib, that it was, in his words, a body blow, and that those involved, whoever they are, his words, will be brought to justice. Is there any sense at this point how high up the U.S. military chain of command investigators are looking to bring people to justice?
It does look like quite a few people are looking at both Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, who is the head of U.S. forces in Iraq, and at Major General Jeffrey Miller, head of the prison. It's Miller's visit last August and September that is most at issue. Basically, what happened was immediately after General Miller left, new rules came into place at the prison that allowed much more leeway to the military intelligence unit to interrogate these prisoners. And General Sanchez later signed off on an order that placed the entire command of the prison under military intelligence as opposed to military police, as Army rules really call for. So those two men are right now very much the center of focus, and whether or not it goes any higher than that really remains to be seen, but they're very much in the hot seat.
Scott, what was the atmosphere as Rumsfeld met with U.S. troops? What kind of troops were gathered there in Al-Fah Palace? How many? And what was the interaction between the secretary and troops?
It appeared to be very much a rowdy, celebratory almost atmosphere. General Richard Myers was also there, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Both men gave speeches that were very well received. Backdrop was American flags and troops in well-pressed uniforms. And so it very much had the feel, obviously, of kind of a set event, which it was. but at the same time, troops do appreciate these kinds of visits.
There is a sound clip where Secretary Rumsfeld said to those troops, "I've stopped reading the newspapers." In fact, let's listen to that for a moment.
"I've stopped reading the newspapers. It's a fact. I'm a survivor."
What did he mean by all that? What was the point of saying that?
It's interesting. I spent most of my day today talking with troops in and around Baghdad about their sense of this scandal and how it's affecting their mission on the ground.
Yeah.
And almost to a soldier, they said, "Look, this was awful." One soldier described it as asinine, disgusting thing that happened in this prison. But you know what? It's distracting from what we're trying to do here. And what they're trying to do right now is extraordinarily difficult. This is my second tour through Iraq, and it is far, far more difficult and violent place than it was during my last time, which was about a year ago. And it's just a very difficult place to be right now as a soldier. And what they really want is for this to go away, for the attention to focus on what they need to do, as one said, lift this cloud from us. And so that, I think, is what Rumsfeld is addressing, to say, you know, we're all going to get through this. We're tired of the attention that's being paid to it, and there's a bigger mission at stake here that we have to get on with.
And Scott, in those conversations with U.S. troops as Rumsfeld visited, did you get a sense of optimism that the U.S. mission can be successfully completed? Are they still optimistic after all this?
If not exactly optimistic, and I won't say they were pessimistic, most of these troops were expressing determination. They want to do this right. They're here. They're away from families. Baghdad is not a pleasant place to be right now, and they want to do this. They want to make sure it's a success. And with 6 weeks left until the United States intends to pass over some political powers to an interim Iraqi government, they have a lot of work ahead, and it's dangerous work. And there was fighting today again in Karbala and Najaf to the south, and 3 U.S. soldiers were reported dead today, 2 killed today and one who died of his wounds after being wounded yesterday. So this is a war here that's still very intense, and the soldiers on the ground, while concerned about the prison scandal, have much bigger concerns on their mind right now.
Scott, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Scott Wilson is a correspondent for The Washington Post. He spoke with us from Baghdad. As one of the top-ranking women in American corporate life, Brenda Barnes made headlines when she left her job as head of PepsiCo's North American beverage business in 1997 to spend more time with her children. She made headlines again this month when she accepted the number 2 spot at food giant Sara Lee Corporation after 7 years at home. A neat trick, but not a typical story. Most American women who have taken time out from the workplace are learning that they have to fight to get back in. Employers and headhunters look at their resumes and see gaps, not years of high-performance multitasking, organizing, and loving. Tonight on Point, reviving a career after raising the kids. Have you made that journey? What's it like to leave the workforce, then try to go back? Have doors been open? Have we figured out how to structure work and parenthood, motherhood, in a single lifetime? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I talked earlier with Hillary Stout, a reporter for The Wall Street Journal, who co-authored the article, "After Years Off, Women Struggle to Revive Careers." I asked her what the trends are of women leaving and re-entering the workforce.
The Center for Work-Life Policy, a New York nonprofit group, surveyed 500 women with professional degrees who said they left their jobs mainly for family reasons, in large part to take care of children, and found that 2/3, 66%, wanted to return to work. Then Harvard Business School did a kind of interesting survey that showed that as women's families grew, women started having children, they tended to step out of the workforce, and then as they got a little older, they tended to go back in. The Harvard Business School surveyed 600 female graduates and found that 96% of them in their late 20s were employed. Mm-hmm. But when they looked at those in their late 30s who had at least 2 children, only 71% were employed. But then, as the women aged, employment seemed to pick up again. 82.5% of those who were in their late 40s said they worked.
And that uptick is what you focused on, what it takes for women to get back into the workforce. But I guess first, looking at why they move out,
it seems that work and child-rearing for some women just don't seem to blend well.
It's hard to do a job well and to raise children. There's a lot of demand on your time, and a number of women, and I need to stress that many, most, if not most of the women who do this are in a financial position to do so. For many women, they simply don't have a choice. Their families need those two incomes.
And that's why such a large percentage keep right on working. Well, they need the income, they want to work, they're invested in their careers. But for some women, either who are so intent on leaving the workforce, so for whom it's financially easier, they're taking this time out.
Taking this time out, deciding they want to focus, and throwing themselves into motherhood. I mean, throwing all the talent that they brought to their jobs into running the PTA, raising lots of money for the school auction, things like that.
There comes a point, you write, that many want to return to work. You quote one mother saying, I don't want to just go to the gym, have lunch with people, and redecorate my house. Of course, there's a lot more than that that women do when they're not working. But what are the main obstacles that women are facing when they're ready and willing to go back to work?
Not all women have a horrible time finding a job. I mean, some do it fairly easily. Some decide they don't want to go back to a very high power career and are able to put together some kind of part-time work. But we found a lot of women do find it a challenge, and there are a number of obstacles. One is just answering the basic question that's going to come from a prospective employer is, what have you been doing for the last 5 years or 10 years? And to try and stack up against some highly credentialed other applicant who's been in the workforce all along is tough, especially mm-hmm. in an economy like this when there aren't too many jobs available to begin with. But there are other sort of more complicated issues at work as well. There are emotional issues. The children are now used to having their mother at home, and so, you know, families may feel in a bit of turmoil, and so women have to cope with that. And then to go back to the professional obstacles, if you've been out of the workforce for any length of time, you're going to miss things in your own field. I mean, we talked to some women whose training was simply obsolete by the time they wanted to go back. You know, there's been a lot of job hopping these days. So, you know, old professional mentors and contacts may have dispersed. You know, you may not even know the language if you're in the high-tech field. You know, a lot changes in simply just a year or two. I mean, some women may find they don't even know how to speak the lingo. We spoke to a woman who had a pretty impressive resume on Wall Street. She had been a securities trader at Credit Suisse First Boston, a portfolio manager at Chase Manhattan Bank, but she had been largely a stay-at-home mom for the past 14 years. She had a Stanford MBA and was trying to go back to work, was meeting with a Wall Street recruitment firm, and the recruiter started quizzing her on various investment products, and she couldn't tell him what some of them were.
Ouch.
So, yeah, yeah.
Painful for her, I'm sure. It sounds awfully daunting, and yet women are succeeding in this. Some very prominently, Brenda Barnes, who had been head of PepsiCo's North American beverage business, left in 97. She's just gone back as number two at Sara Lee Corporation, big company.
Absolutely. We don't want to paint only a picture of doom and gloom, and some women do manage to go back, and some women try very hard to keep up their professional credentials, even though they're not going to an office. But I do want to say about Brenda Barnes, I don't think she's representative of what most of these women's lives have been like. She was one of the highest-ranking women in corporate America, and when she left to spend time with her children, she got a lot of attention in the press, and she was never really out of the business world, face it. She took 6 years off, I believe, and continued to serve on six corporate boards.
Not your standard standard issue.
No, she only has the PTA to put on her resume.
Right. Hillary Stout, we're going to dive into this and look at many aspects of what women are facing when they turn around to head back into the workforce tonight, but we thank you for your reporting and for joining us.
Okay, well, thank you.
Hillary Stout is a reporter with The Wall Street Journal. We are talking tonight about women who have taken time off from careers, battling back into the American workplace. Do you have a wife, a sister, a mother who left the workforce and is now trying to get back in? Have you made that journey yourself? What's it like? Did you leave a career to be a full-time mom? Have you tried to go back? Was the door open? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about women who have taken time off from careers, battling back into the American workplace. You can join our conversation tonight. Did you leave a career to be a full-time mom for a while? Have you tried to go back? And was the door open? What did you find when you knocked? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight from Wilton, Connecticut, by Catherine Solman. She's co-founder of Women at Work Network. It connects women returning to the workforce with employers and with other women in similar circumstances. Catherine Solman, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hello, Tom.
Great to have you. And with me in the studio tonight, Mary Shapiro, assistant professor at the Simmons School of Management. She's author of Your Job Interview, an easy, smart guide to interview success. Mary Shapiro, thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Tom.
So Hillary Stout has sort of begun to set the stage for us. We've got this reversal of an almost 30-year trend, and this is only one slice, but what they looked at, the number they focused on was 2002. What was it? 55% of women with children younger than, I'm going to get tangled in these statistics now. The percentage of mothers in the workforce with a child younger than one dropped to 55%. It had been 59%. It was the first drop in 30 years. It's been taken as indicative that some larger portion of women are taking some time out. Mary Shapiro, are you seeing this as a phenom out there?
We certainly are seeing that women are taking time off from work. However, that one statistic also doesn't reflect, I think, other career paths that women are taking. For example, the rise in women entrepreneurs has outpaced men significantly over the last 10 years. So whether it's women choosing not to return into organizations, and that's what's getting reflected in the Wall Street Journal graph, or
right.
whether it's women are choosing to be self-employed, to start their own businesses. 48% of privately held businesses in the United States are owned by women. So I also think that what women are also doing is choosing alternatives to full-time staying at home or other career paths as well.
So it's a great point. This is quite a varied picture here. Women doing mm-hmm. all kinds of things, including, as you say, starting their own businesses in great numbers. We by no means want to stereotype here about going home to bake cookies. Women are doing many things, and we fully acknowledge that. At the same time, we want to be real about those women who are going home for a while to do that thing and then turning around to go back to the workforce, because they're out there, and we read in great detail the kind of thing they're dealing with. Catherine Solman, what's your sense? You deal with a lot of women in exactly that circumstance of what people, women, face when they turn around after a year, two, three, five, 7 years out of the workforce and knock on the door to come back in. What kind of reception are they getting?
Well, it depends on how they package themselves, Tom. If they package themselves as returning professional women, we see that they get a very good response. And that's really the difference. Women, when they put their resumes together, have to be thinking about what their skills are, and the skills that they had in the professional world, the skills that they have continued to develop in the volunteer world, and they have to be sure that they're conveying all those skills in business terms to employers.
So present it right, and yet I'm reading story after story here in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere of highly credentialed and quite experienced women who have come back, professional women who have come back, presumably done a decent job of presenting themselves, and still found that gap in years that was no doubt very important to them and their family doesn't look so great, Catherine Solman, necessarily to an employer.
Well, again, it's back to what those skills are. Women generally do not do a good job of selling themselves. Even women who are currently in the workforce and who have never left, even women who are at the CEO level. We talk to professional coaches all the time who say that women at very high levels don't like to brag about their skills or really put their best foot forward. And we at Women at Work take women through a series of exercises so that they can name those skills and really present the whole picture of who they are and what they can offer employers. And my guess is that many of the women who are in these doom and gloom stories are not packaging themselves well.
We're going to come back and look at the best way to get back in, but I want to understand that reality of knocking at that door. Mary Shapiro, you know, the irony is that the 30s, a person's 30s and 40s, which are great career-building years, are also great child-bearing years. Many, many women figure out ways by hook and by crook to have families and career, and many do it very well. And in fact, we saw in the New York Times on Mother's Day this graph showing that women who work actually take more satisfaction in their families by a small margin than women who don't. Still, it's tough, and we're reading these stories about why it's tough. What kind of, we'll look at the way in, but what kind of headwinds do you see women facing when they come back after that gap of some years?
I think that in Hillary's article, she did sum up that there were these emotional barriers, but the skill barrier also was a really significant one. I find that many of our MBA students at Simmons are actually looking to return. And so some of them are coming in using their time to update their skills by getting an MBA. I also see women spending a lot of time thinking about how are they going to reenter. And that was some of the questions that I had as reading the article. The issues around reviving their networks. That's really, really important.
And hard to do in a time when people are so mobile. Your network may have scattered while you've been at home.
Absolutely. One of the first places that you could start would be at your school career outplacement or services to reconnect with fellow alumni, even though they might be 20 years ago. It's joining professional organizations again and starting the networking from scratch, which is a hard thing to do. But rebuilding the network and then rebuilding your experiences and your skill levels absolutely is very important.
So people look at the Brenda Barnes story, and of course she's a very high ranking corporate officer, and they say, wow, you know, she just kept right on going. She sat on 6 boards of directors even while she was at home. But in your observation, let's be real about this. Mm-hmm. How hard is it to pick up where you left off or anywhere near where one might have been after that time away? What portion of women succeed and what portion have to sort of settle for a very different career trajectory than they might otherwise have been on, Mary?
Right. I think a lot of women do wind up having to make career changes, as was in the article. But they also, what we counsel our women and the women that I wind up doing consulting with, is that it will take time. It is very difficult. It takes a lot of persistence. And you have to think about working in incremental steps, that you're not going to go walking right back into the same level of position that you had before. A lot of it is getting back in, starting at an entry level. Some of the more creative ways is interacting with companies to try to identify outsourced work that they are looking to hire contract consultants.
That you might even do before you come back full time.
Absolutely. A lot of women start making, rather than waiting until I'm ready to look for a job tomorrow, 6 months, 12 months before that point, really start the networking and the taking minor project work as a way of building skills, building success stories, and really starting to add to that resume beyond the PTA, which certainly shows leadership skills, but oftentimes to many employers, they want to see that work experience.
So not just a toe dip, but start to wade in.
That's right.
A lot of women want to join this conversation. Let's turn to them. Connie is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Connie. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I really appreciate this topic. It's one I can relate to because it is exactly what happened to me. I took 10 years off to raise my family.
Between what ages, Connie, may I ask?
Well, from the day the first one was born.
How old were you then?
24.
Okay, so sort of 24 to 34, something like that. You were out.
Yeah, yep. But I never really stayed disconnected. I always had some kind of freelance job on the side.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to stay plugged in. Nonetheless, the day I walked back into an office for my first half-time job, I just freaked out. Everybody had a computer on their desk. When I left, no one had a computer on their desk. And so when I came back, it was a real shock, and I had to really work to learn how to use all this new technology. And I can't imagine now, 10 years later, wondering just, you know, being away for that long and then having to come in and pick up all that new technology. However, I would say staying plugged in, however you manage to do it, whether it's just staying in your professional organizations or whatever, really gives you a leg up when it comes to going back because you've still got those relationships.
And tell us the end of your story, Connie. After your freak out over the computer, did you make it back in?
Well, it was an up and down. It's an up. Yeah, I have, but it was an up and down thing. I took a part-time job that turned into a full-time job. Mm-hmm. I couldn't handle it. I had to leave that job because I have a husband who travels and two little kids.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I left that job, took another part-time job, took another part-time job, and eventually when they got to high school, I did take a full-time job, and I've been able to stay full-time since then.
But, well, good on you for staying on that bucking bronco and figuring out a way to make it work. Connie, thanks very much for your call. Catherine Solman, a fascinating story in many ways here, the way Connie and I'm sure many other women have had to kind of ride with the waves. But what about this simple technology issue as a barrier to returning to the workplace? There's all kinds of technologies and software packages and Blackberries and everything else that suddenly everyone's using. And you know those can be intimidating if you've been away for a while.
Well, I think, Tom, in most general terms, our lives both in the workplace and the home have become technology dependent. And chances are that a woman carrying a cell phone, a BlackBerry, a laptop, and a PowerPoint presentation
right.
is going to be going to either a PTA meeting or a sales meeting.
That's true.
With, you know, especially with mega volunteers, they are very technologically savvy. And
getting those databases maintained and that newsletter out can keep you right on top of a lot of technology.
Absolutely. And most non-working women are very skilled in the computer basics. And then when you start to get to things that are more complicated, there are endless numbers of resources out there to get up to speed quickly.
I want to reach out to Darien, Connecticut right now. We've got joining us there Pamela Akon. She's been looking for full-time employment off and on for 2 years. Good evening and welcome, Pamela.
Hello. Well, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Pamela, tell us about what you were doing previously in your career and when you decided to take time out.
Before I had my first daughter, I was a corporate bond salesman for a British merchant bank selling to U.S. institutions. And then when I was 29, I left the workforce and began to paint. And then little by little, I got into the graphic design end of things through my volunteer work, designing invitations, and then subsequently I did go back to school to some part-time classes to learn the publishing software that professional graphic designers use. So I, unlike Connie, have stayed very computer literate and don't find it daunting at all. And as Catherine pointed out, most of the people I know are very comfortable with the computer and do travel with their BlackBerries and use
right.
laptops, and it's really not intimidating for
us. So no bump in the road at all there. But
no.
So when you decided to head back in, what was your target? What's the job that you wanted or still want to get career-wise?
Well, I think I have a unique mix of skills with my Wall Street background and my art and graphic design. So I would love to get into something in the way of corporate communications or designing newsletters or logos, working for a traditional design firm, or some kind of something tied into finance with, as I said, corporate communications.
So it's a combination of skills from your career and from the skills you picked up when you were outside the career.
Correct.
And you sound pretty flexible, and yet I'm reading here you've been looking off and on for 2 years. What kind of reception are you finding out there?
I generally get good reception. But as I get into it, I get busy with my own business, or I have a painting show, and I sell a lot of paintings, and I get commissions, and I just get a little bit sidetracked. But I have two children who are going to be in high school next year, and I'm ready for more of a traditional commitment, more of a little bit more structure. I don't like the ad hoc nature of what I'm doing right now. I would like benefits. I would like coworkers. I would like an office to go
sure.
to.
And what's your confidence, Pamela, that when you're ready for that next year, you're going to be able to find that position, given what you've seen out there?
Given what I've seen out there, I think that the interesting combination positions that fit my qualifications are out there. They're not like as plentiful as a secretarial position, but I think that I've gotten a couple of good leads from women at work with interesting, quirky combinations that suit me exactly. There's not many of them, but I will wait for the right thing. I won't just take whatever comes along. I'm not just looking for a job. I
right.
want the right job that
right.
I will enjoy and do well in.
It sounds great. Catherine Solman, what do you take away from Pamela's story?
Well, you know, Pamela is very indicative of the women in our network who are looking for something other than a huge salary, title, prestige, the corner office, all of that sort of thing. All the talk about whether women can pick up where they left off, that's not what we're hearing with the women in our network.
You mean that's not what they're aiming at, in other words?
Right. They're right now, this is the second time around, and it's about self-fulfillment, sense of purpose, intellectual stimulation. They can afford in monetary terms and also in time terms to wait for the job that they want that is going to give them that self-fulfillment.
They can afford that because the women that you're networking with come from a particular economic class? I mean, not everybody can afford to wait for that fulfilling job, right? There's college bills to be paid and groceries to be bought.
That's true, but I think that they, many of the women in our network are not women that have to get to work tomorrow, but they do have a goal for the college education or, you know, for a contribution to the family. It's just that they can afford to be a little bit more choosy, but they will, you know, eventually get a job that meets their criteria.
Pamela Aiken, we want to wish you good luck when you dive back in fully, and thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much.
I want to get one quick call before the break here. Diane is calling from Boston.
Hello.
Hi, Diane. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I guess I called in. I took 7 years off. I'm a physician, and I practiced full-time before children and then part-time after each of my first three children.
Yeah.
After my fourth was born, because my husband's a physician as well and works very long hours, I took 7 years off because I decided that I was going to raise the children myself and not bring in someone else to do it.
Right.
I think my point that I wanted to make was that after taking time off full-time with the children and really devoting time to them, I was less likely to be seduced by my career as a physician. Medicine is a very seductive mistress and can take hours and hours, endless hours. Also can bring rewards, for me it was academic medicine, so the rewards would have been those of promotion, you know, in rank.
But you found you had other priorities, other interests, work didn't rate as high anymore?
That's right. I think my heart was taken more by my family. I enjoy medicine now. I practice again part-time, and it has its rewards. It's fun to make people better, and it's intellectually stimulating as well. I enjoy my colleagues, but I still have to place first priority on my family now, having done it.
Diane, it's a great story. Thanks for sharing it. Mary Shapiro, our time is short before the break, but is this, I mean, it sounds great. On the one hand, Diane's got more perspective now. She enjoys a range of things and knows it, but does this make employers, potential employers for some women, nervous that is this woman going to really commit when she comes back after time away?
I think, if anything, employers really appreciate the candor, and especially when a job candidate can go in and say, I really know what I want now.
Mm-hmm.
I have had these life experiences that have really clarified what my purpose in life is and where I'm going to get my satisfaction, and really recognizing that this job is going to be one of those areas of satisfaction.
Mary Shapiro, Catherine Solomon, stand by. We're going to take a short break. We're talking tonight about women who have taken time off from careers, battling back into the American workplace. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about women who have taken time off from careers, battling back into the American workplace. I'm joined tonight by Mary Shapiro, assistant professor at the Simmons School of Management, with me here in the studio, and from Wilton, Connecticut, by Catherine Solomon, co-founder of Women at Work Network, which connects women returning to the workforce with employers. You can join us as well. Have you left a career for a time to be a full-time mom? Have you tried to go back? Was the door open? Is it worth a career setback, even, to have the time at home with the kids? Does it have to come with a setback? Are there other ways of looking at it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined right now from Connecticut by Lenore Palmer. She joined Cambridge Financial Services Group as a senior consultant this year after some time away. Good evening and welcome, Lenore Palmer.
Thank you. Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. Lenore, tell us your story. What was your career? When did you step back from it for a while, and how was your return?
Okay. My career was mostly in international banking, which was fascinating and interesting for me. And I left in 1991. I had a six-year-old son. I was divorced at that point and
yeah.
very much wanted to spend time with him, which I did until this January. So I guess that is about a 13-year break from the workforce. During that time, I went to school. I did a lot of volunteer work here in town. And I joined the Women at Work Network when I wanted to look for work seriously, and that decision got delayed a couple of years because of an illness in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working since January, and I must say it's a tough learning curve, but I enjoy it thoroughly, and I think I'm very lucky. I've read about these stories of other women and how tough it is. I think where I work, they really want someone who can multitask a great deal, that can do all sorts of jobs, and I think that because of the flexibility I have and the ability to work now, my son is in college. I can
right.
work all the time.
Lenore, did you go back to the same kind of work that you did before your 13-year break or something new?
I'm still in finance, but I'm not doing any banking. Cambridge is a group of consultants and brokers, and they provide health insurance for employees, and they also do pension and 401k plans.
And when you interviewed for this job, could you feel them kind of, looking to see, are you up to speed? Is she committed to working again? Could you feel a special kind of inquisition that went on because you'd been out of the workforce or not?
I'm not sure it was because I was out of the workforce so much as that they were being very, very careful about the person they hired. They asked a great many questions. I was interviewed by three different people. They really wanted to know what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of women who worked there, and they were very tough in terms of saying you have to be willing to do a bit of everything. This is a very much a team group, which it is. And I was very happy with that. That's fine with me.
Did anybody say to you, Lenore, why haven't you been working? Or did they just understand you you had duties at home for a while, and that was natural and understood?
It was understood.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like a pretty good story, and you're happy with it now and glad to be back.
Yes, I'm delighted.
Well, it's great. Lenore, thanks for sharing that with us.
Okay.
Donna's calling from Lowell, Massachusetts. Hi, Donna. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I left my job as an office manager at a university, and 8 years and three kids later, I went back to work about a year ago.
Okay.
Now, and I went back to a part-time job at a municipality I was doing some little, almost contract work for during the time that I was principally home, and that allowed me to work from home and kind of gave me a foot in the door.
Right, you kept your aura in there with some contract work. Okay.
I did, and I also took classes. I did all those things that one of your guests said to do.
Right, all the right stuff. So how's it going now that you're back full time?
It's a challenge, I have to say, and my employer is extremely family friendly. I'm very lucky in that way. I don't know how women do it that don't have that kind of support. You know, my kids are still young, and I'm allowed to go to the preschool tea parties and that kind of thing, and they're wonderful about it.
That's pretty great. The challenge you're talking about is balancing that parenting and working.
Yes, because my responsibilities to my home and my family didn't change or lessen when I went back to work.
Right.
We couldn't afford to hire somebody else to step in and do my old job.
Donna, let me ask you, when you decided to come home and take care of the kids for a while, was there any discussion of your husband doing that rather than you, or was that just not on the table?
That really wasn't on the table at the time.
Because his income was higher, because he wouldn't consider it, or because you wanted to do it?
I really wanted to do it. I felt very committed to it and committed to doing a good job, and I think I brought – it was just what I wanted to do. And I'm a very committed person, and when I was working, I was completely committed to my job.
Right.
And when I was home, I was completely committed to the kids and doing the best I could for them and you know, the carpools and the committees and the playgroups and
yeah.
the whole.
So let me ask you now that you're working full-time again, you say you find it pretty challenging to balance, even with what sounds like a really flexible employer. Does that ever lead you to consider checking out for a while again, or are you committed now to working and parenting both?
I have my moments when I think I would like to check out. However, I will say that now that I went back to work, I hold the health insurance benefits, and I have those kind of very practical things that the family needs. So in a lot of ways, I can't check out.
Hard to go back, even if you want to.
Right, and that's one thing I think women should think about seriously when they do go back.
You mean that, that they're going to be depended on once they do?
Exactly.
Are you sorry you went back? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not sorry that I went back. I'm still on the learning curve.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a lot to handle, but it sounds like you're doing a pretty good job and have found a pretty flexible employer to do it with. Donna, thanks a lot for calling. Mary Shapiro, I asked Donna about her husband. These Wall Street Journal stories about women. It could just as easily have been about men. But, of course, in our society, it generally is not. Have we figured out, I asked this to listeners earlier, but do we have a structure that acknowledges the many hats that parents, and particularly women, are asked to wear? Or is corporate America, workplace America, still kind of going along as though everybody ought to just be able to make this work somehow and never mind the details?
In general, corporate America still is just assuming that the individuals are going to figure out how to make it work. What I find interesting, and it was an interesting question to Donna, is when I'm counseling women who are in that stage of do I leave or don't I leave, do I step out of my role as a full-time employed person,
mm-hmm.
One of the first things we ask them is to think about, well, is this something that your partner might be better suited to do, whether it's because their partner might be more interested in staying at home. You had asked about
the income. So at least think about it. Yeah.
At least think about it. 12 years ago when my third child was born, mm-hmm. my husband was ready to make a big career shift, and he actually chose to say, you know what, your career is taking off, you stay where you are, I'll take a couple years off.
And he did that in your
case. And he did up. And he would say, he would absolutely agree with you that it is just as hard, if not harder, for men who have taken time off.
That's like, what the heck have you been doing?
That's right. The employers then really look at them and think they really are an aberration.
Right, right. Though maybe a lot less of an aberration now than it would have been some years ago.
Absolutely.
It sounds like you've got almost a checklist then of things to consider before you leave the workplace, never mind getting back in.
Yes.
And one is to think about whether your spouse might be better positioned to do that. What else?
That's right. The other thing that we ask women to think about is really if they are the ones that are saying, no, I want to stay home, is to give themselves the permission to do that and the emotional permission. It's also giving themselves...
Don't feel guilty. Don't feel like you've let down the team,
absolutely.
The women's movement, whatever.
That's right. Even though, you know, certainly with all the recent articles in Time and Wall Street Journal of everyone saying, oh, women's intuition all of a sudden, or women's, you know, instincts, mother's instincts are flaring up. They really have to think about what's the best decision for themselves and mm-hmm. not worry about what this implicates for the women's movement. But also recognizing that, similar to like what Diane, the doctor that called
yes.
in,
mm-hmm.
talked about,
mm-hmm.
is recognizing that it's okay to not have a linear career path.
Mm-hmm.
That like what Diane did is she worked full-time, then
right.
she worked part-time, now she's choosing not to even go back full-time. And that is a perfectly valid, good career path, and it makes sense for her and for her family.
And though the economy can be tough now, in some ways it's very accommodating. More work-at-home options, more alternate
That's
schedule
right.
options, more self-employment options.
That's
women.
Right. Technology lets you work anywhere. So a lot of women need to think about that it's okay to not go into that office every day. The last thing that I ask people to think about, women to think about before leaving, is how are they going to keep current? How, and then ultimately, how are they going to think about re-entering?
Mm-hmm.
Because those are two really significant hurdles. So making the decision to stay at home, but thinking about how am I going to keep current? Am I going to take classes?
Mm-hmm.
Like the finance woman.
Right, got into graphic arts.
Got into graphic arts,
mm-hmm.
Did contract work. Makes it much easier to then when you go to re-enter that you have kept current with the terminology, the technology.
Can people stay in professional associations even when they're no longer working?
Absolutely, yes.
That might be a pretty good way.
Yes.
Bridget's calling from Peterson, Massachusetts. Hi, Bridget. You're on the air.
Yes, the point I wanted to make, I lead an HR function at a local company in Waltham, and we love to hire moms who have spent time with their families because we find that they have a high degree of emotional intelligence as well as an enormous ability to multitask, and we find those as key factors that determine employee success at our company.
So you're actually looking for just this returning mom as a great candidate.
Yeah, they're fabulous.
That's terrific and great to hear. Bridget, thanks for calling in with that. Kevin Solman, you've got a kind of checklist of things for women when they're looking at going back, starting with never apologize for the time off.
Well, that's right. We say that you know that was something that you decided to do for yourself and for your family, and you just talk about what you've been doing in a very positive and forthright manner, and again focus on those skills. One of the points I wanted to make from what has been talked about is that we really need to say that most of the women in our network would never have left the workforce had there been some kind of flexibility. I think that's a really key issue.
You mean if only their corporation or employer had been able to what? To let them work half-time, work mornings or afternoons, something like that?
Right. And we have never come across a woman who said, I disliked working and I never want to work again.
If they could only be offered some kind of structure that would be more generous in accommodating that family role.
Absolutely.
They'd be there.
And what we're finding with employers is that flexibility puts up this red flag, because employers often think that flexibility means chaos, that everybody's coming in and leaving at different times.
Is that still not changing after all these years? And anybody who's had a family knows you're in la-la land if you don't see the impossibilities of full-time work and family sometimes.
Well, we are seeing more and more employers getting very smart about offering flexibility. And in fact, women who we are placing, the single most important part of the employment package is flexibility. It's not the salary. It's not the 401k plan. Is there any kind of flexibility?
In other words, it's most important to the women who are looking for jobs.
Absolutely.
But how widespread is that kind of flexibility actually?
Well, what we've found, too, is that flexibility has many different definitions.
Mm-hmm.
We have women who are commuting 2.5 hours to New York from Connecticut, and they'll say to us, just find me a job in Connecticut, a full-time traditional job, and to me, that's flexibility.
Cut the commute out, and I've got what I need.
Exactly. Then there are other women who say, if I could just come in at 9:30 instead of 9, and every morning I can bring my child to school,
right,
then that's flexibility to me. And what employers are
these are so heartbreakingly modest in what's being asked.
Absolutely, and that's why more and more employers are getting more and more family-friendly, and then they are getting very high-caliber women. And the other very important point is that employers have to start being more flexible and being more receptive to returning professional women, because the workforce is shrinking.
And aging. It seems like a good time, actually, for women, Mary Shapiro, to make their case and say, hopefully women who are in management in companies say, come on, let's just change the cookie-cutter hours and the rest of it, be a little accommodating, and look at the resource we can tap.
Yes, and I agree with Catherine in that more and more employers are recognizing that to get your best talent, you have to be able to give them what they need that allows them to work for you and to make their contribution. I also agree the idea of not apologizing. Go in and be proud of the decisions that you've made. It shows your commitment, your passion, your ability to take risk, be a leader. That's what you need to convey to that employer.
Well, this has been a great insight for me, and I hope our listeners as well. Really interesting. Mary Shapiro, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Mary Shapiro is assistant professor at the Simmons School of Management, author of Your Job Interview, and Catherine Solman in Wilton, Connecticut. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
Catherine Solman is co-founder of Women at Work Network. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.